Welcome everyone to the Cup of Coffee podcast with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This is being recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world. Today's topic is how to do better projects and make more money with Paul Tinker. Before we start, I'd like to say by way of a disclaimer that today is a wonderful discussion, but that nothing said here constitutes financial advice. And you should always take professional advice before investing your hard-earned cash. There may be the odd unplanned swear word along the way as well. The format for today is that Paul will speak to us for a little while, and then we'll be taking questions from me and from the floor. Get your questions ready. Paul is a leading refurbishment expert, trainer, coach, mentor, award-winning developer, speaker, magazine columnist, and author. He's also a proud dad of four children and a loving husband. Paul is a former soldier, serving 14 years as a Royal Engineer. Then he was trained as a bricklayer and now has over 15 years hands-on industry experience. He's a Prince II project management practitioner. Paul's largest single project was £18 million and his refurbishment turnover is £300 million. He's successfully delivered 3,000 projects nationally. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Was the swear thing about me?
I think I've heard you before. We have it every week, but maybe it's more relevant this week. I don't know. I guess we're about to find out.
Right. Okay. Yeah. As you said, and it was 18.1 million, by the way.
Oh, there's a profit for it.
Still have that in there. Okay. Let me just get my doofer up. Okay. Thanks for having me, first and foremost. It is my pleasure to just run through a bit of top tips, a bit of framework, a bit of high-level planning for any refurbishment project. So if you are doing a small two-down buy-to-let refurb, or you're doing a huge commercial conversion, the one thing that remains the same on any size of project is the process and the things that you must have in place in order for you to deliver a compliant, first and foremost, efficient, effective, and profitable, the one that we're all here for, project. Because without any of those things, what was the point in doing it in the first place? So common misconceptions, common things that I hear from on podcasts, on webinars that I teach, events that I speak at, common things I hear from property investors is that the refurb's the easy bit. The refurb's just the bit that just gets done by others, or we just outsource it. Or it's not something that, you know, we're not going to get too bothered about. You know, we're going to sort of use a square meter rate to price up the work, or it doesn't matter how long it takes because it's just time. Or I'll do the work myself. These types of statements. And when we talk about, as I get into this, as I talk some more, because I do tend to waffle and go off on tangents, but we're all right with that. And the one thing that is common with all them things is that it doesn't come with, none of those things are calculated. There's no science behind any of them. It's just guesswork the whole way through the process. Now, most property training out there that I've experienced myself and that of what I've listened to on YouTube, places like that, and guys that I follow, there's a lot of focus on how we go about buying the property, I mean, different sources of finance to be able to buy it, strategies to buy in. And all of that good stuff. There's lots of strategies toward the back end and how we refinance. I've just seen Julie there. How are you, Julie? And finance back end, all this stuff at the arse end, when we're coming out of the deal, I see a lot of education around these two parts. But the bit where the money's made is in the middle. It's in the refurb process, in the adding value process. That's where the skill comes. Anybody can go and buy a property and anybody can go sell it. Anyone can do that without training, without any approach, without... You can do it on the phone from sitting on your bed in your underpants if you so desire. But the refurb process, you've got to be involved with that. That takes effort. And there's a lot of work involved in doing that. Yet people don't seem to want to do that. They don't seem to want to have this standardized, systemized, profitable, compliant approach to a project. And you must have that, assuming that you want to make profit from it and you want to do it compliantly. Of course, there are people out there winging it. Of course, there are. There are people that do this thing for a hobby. I get that as well. There are people that are doing it to their own home, so they don't really care about profit and adding value. They just want to live in a nice property. I get that as well. But if you're in this room, by virtue of being in this room, on this podcast, masterclass, I don't even know what this is, cup of coffee, whatever this is, if you're in here, I'm guessing that you're doing this because you're in this to make money, to be profitable in your projects. So what my training and coaching covers is a standardized approach to a refurb. We're going to approach everyone in the same manner. be it a 2-up, 2-down refurb, or be it a big, huge commercial conversion. It doesn't matter. The process and the approach remains the same. We're still going to go through the same process each time, 10-step process that we train. The four key ones, though, of that 10 that I want to go through with you today is the specification. And what I mean by a specification is the things that you are putting in, the items that you're installing, and how the importance of those are relative to your exit strategy. Your program of works. So the program of works is all about the time, the period in which the project is going to be delivered. The check-in milestones, the start date, the end date, how you can plan your finance relative to the program of works, how you can get guys lined up in advance, how we can find out how long each elemental piece of work is going to take, and how we can align exit and plans, delivery plans for that project within that. Then we look at the build cost, the elusive build cost that people seem to want to be able to calculate on the end of the finger or on a calculator or on a cheat sheet or a formulaic approach to the number. And then we're going to look at contracts and agreements and how we tie all of that into one document. Well, I'll get through as much as that of what I can, because as I say, I do tend to go off on tangents. Thanks for the intro there. Just another bit about me. As he said there, I've done over £300 million in revenue in terms of refurbishment. I've done over 3,000 projects. I've coached over 1,000 people on delivering projects in this manner. My largest project, £18.1 million, took me 2 years to do. It was up in Glasgow, 3 tower blocks. Next one down from that was £2.1 million, cut a tower block in Scunthorpe. That was another full refurbishment. External scaffold upon 13 floors, roof works, windows, balconies, internal kitchens, bathrooms, rewire, render, plaster, heating systems, the lot. We've done everything in them projects. In my own business, we've turned over about 800K in the last couple of years, working solely with property strategists looking to add value to their own portfolio. And since then, I've featured on Sky TV. As he said, I'm a published author now, which was challenging. I've done almost 100 podcasts now with as guest appearances in the last year. Magazine author, columnist, should I say. Been in many featured articles, trained over 1,000 people, as I said. But despite all that, the truth is that, yes, I've made money, and yes, I've lost money as well, and I've made every single fuck up under the sun that there is to make. I guarantee it. Nobody's fucked up bigger than me. I guarantee that. I've even been in front of the man with a curly wig. That's a judge for those that don't know. So there are two ways to do this, and that's either to learn from your mistakes or to learn from your own mistakes or from the mistakes of others, and that's what I'm hoping to help you with today. So let me get my notes up. 2 seconds. As I said, the fundamental basics to that project, to running a project, the four cornerstone basics, we're looking for a build cost. A build cost that's based upon something. We're looking at a program of work, so we have a duration. Then we're looking at a specification, which is the things that you're going to do to it, the job list, if you will, in a layman term, and then your contract, which is what we're going to tie all of those three things into. Becomes, let's call it the folder. In the chat for me, do me a favor, type in your current approach to pricing up refurbishment work. Be honest now. How do you do it right now? Do we use square meter rates? Do we guess? Do we put our finger in the air? Have we got an approach at all? Listen to our mate, listen to a deal packager. How do we do it? Budget item, schedule of rates. Budget item per works, like it, Julie. Three quotes, it's one way. Three quotes based on what? Analyzer. I'm guessing that's a spreadsheet approach. Send out quotes for £1,000 square meter for bigger stuff. I hope that's a joke. I hope you're following me and that's a joke. Yeah. So first and foremost, I was hoping somebody said square meter rate just so I can quash that myth straight away. So the size of the property, its footprint on which the ground in which it sits, that's what we're talking about when we say a square meter rate for refurb. What we're saying is we're going to measure the property, the front and then the side, times them two numbers together. So let's say we've got 7 meters across the front and 7 meters down the side. So that building is 49 square meters. It's across two floors, so it's 98 square meters. Just so I don't have to get my calculator out, I'm going to say that's 100 square meters. So it's a 100 square meter house, and we're going to now times that by something, a square meter rate. Now, first and foremost, no one knows what that fucking square meter rate is. It's just a whatever number comes to mind at the time. Let's say 250 seems to be a real common one that I hear. So what we're saying is that every 100 square meter property in this country is 25 grand to refurbish it. That in itself is nuts. Any property, the only way to price up a refurb is to price up the refurb. That's the simple approach to it. We can't say that because it's this big, it's going to be this much. Because the only thing that helps you with the square meter rates is how much carpet that you need. If we've measured the floor area, that's the only thing that it tells me. Because the property is 100 square meters, that doesn't tell me how many doors I need. It doesn't tell me if I need a kitchen or not. It doesn't tell me if the roof's knackered or not. It doesn't tell me if it's damp. It doesn't tell me if it needs a rewire. It doesn't tell me if it needs a boiler. It doesn't tell me anything about the house at all, other than how much carpet I'm going to need. So where this approach has ever came from, I don't know. But it makes no sense at all. So that's the first myth I want to quash before I get into this. I've proved this on around about 100 case studies now, how this doesn't work. A friend of mine bought a 60 square meter property, a really small property in Scunthorpe town centre. So he thought he could get away with this because it was a small property. He's thinking to himself, ah, it's only 60 square meter, the 250 rule will work. So it was a mid-terrace, really tiny property, 30 on the ground floor, 30 on the first floor. Excuse me. Client purchased it based on the £250 a square meter, and his total estimated bill cost was therefore 15K. He actually spent 27,000. Now, some might say, oh, it's only 12K more, but that's like nearly 100% out. Now, imagine that being on a bigger project and his estimated bill cost was 150 grand and he was out by the same percentile amount, he'd have been out by 120 grand. Imagine if it was an even bigger project and he was out by 1.2 million because he'd used this crazy approach. Now, that's the thing. When we're looking at bill cost, there's so many things to consider, not just a number like that. We've got to do the work. Without, if you don't do the work, if you can't do the work that's required, then then it needs to be outsourced. If you haven't got the skills, knowledge, and experience in order to do so, you need to be outsourcing this to either a builder or a quantity surveyor or an estimator or someone that can actually do this for you. There's so many considerations to make when it comes to that bill cost. First and foremost, geography. When I say geography, I don't mean property strategy geography. You know, is it going to rent well or is it going to sell well? I'm talking about local labor rates. You know, a rewire in Middlesex is going to cost you twice of what it'll cost you in Middlesbrough. So we can't possibly apply any sort of multiplying rate to a square meter footprint size of a building if we're not considering geography. Delivery methodology is another one. This is probably the biggest one that I see people, the mistake made. So with the delivery methodology, you've got to know how you're going to deliver that project. Are you going to do it? There's four main ways of doing a project. We're going to go labor only, individual trades. We're going to go labor only, one-stop shop, or we're going to go labor, plant and materials, individual trades, or labor, plant materials, one-stop shop. All four of those things are going to come with a different price and a different amount of effort required from you as the client stroke project manager. We might just outsource the whole thing to one guy, to one project manager, and say, go do me that. But in all of those things, in no matter which way we go do it, no matter which way, which methodology we use to deliver that project, we've still got to get the other two cornerstones in place, the other three cornerstones in place, in fact. Otherwise, your build cost doesn't mean anything. So many people that I hear say, let's look at the build cost, and you get given a number by someone. But if that number's not based upon anything, there's no point of reference for that number to be based upon, then the number doesn't mean anything. It's all well and good saying, oh, I've got a quote of a builder that's 10K or 20K, 30K, whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. If that 30K build cost doesn't have a point of reference in terms of spec, time, and methodology, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a number that someone's pulled out of the air. So it must have a point of reference. It's a bit like saying a car's going to cost you 20K. Well, what kind of car? What model? What model of car? What color? What's the spec of the car? We got alloys, we've got CD player. I always use that. Some people tell me that you don't get CD players in cars anymore. So that's enough on build cost for right now for you to try and digest, conscious of how long I have here and how much I don't want to go down rabbit holes and tangents, and I do want to give you some time for questions as well. So program is the next thing. Your programmer works. So many people say it's only time, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter how long it takes me. Now, if you're in this to make money, this is your number one cost. Time is your number one cost if you're in this thing to make money. Now, let me explain why time's so critical when it comes to delivering a refurb project. You must understand what your running costs are for your project. Look at the liability of that asset whilst it's not bringing you in an income. The liability of the asset, you've got council tax, you've got utilities, you've got meter charges, insurance, your own time, travel to and from site to do your check-ins, to do your sign-offs, to do your, assuming you're doing it properly, that is, to do your visits, to do your signing in, to managing your CDM, all of that stuff, all that stuff that's required comes at a cost to you as a business on a day-to-day basis. So for every day over your anticipated period, your programmer works that you go over, it's costing you that in lost time. So the ownership of the asset right now is a liability. So that liability is still going to, it's going to continue to accrue as long as you are not finished. Not only is the liability still sitting there, you're also getting that at that point, there's no income coming from the asset that should be incoming. So if your programmer works, for example, says 4 weeks, and the fifth week you should have been getting rent, how much rent are you now missing out on because the project has overrun? This is why time is your biggest cost. We carried out an exercise on a live training that I did, an in-person training. It was about 4 months ago now. I tell this story because it's the biggest eye-opener that I've ever seen someone have. He was doing a HMO conversion in North Yorkshire. He's done all the work himself, absolutely everything. The guy was, he's trained and qualified to do so, but he's done absolutely everything. The only thing he didn't do was the gas work to the boiler, but everything else he's done himself, everything. It's taken him 14 months to do this project. And he was so chuffed and so proud of himself, which I get that someone might want to do that, a bit of sweat equity, I get that. But when I showed him the numbers of what that's costing in loss of income and loss of rental income, he was absolutely blown away. He's never considered it at all. Like, oh, but this is my job and it's been paid me. But look what you could have been doing whilst generating income from the asset from a 5-bed HMO. Massive penny drop moment it was for him. So program, yes, the quicker that your projects are delivered, the more profitable that project will be every single time. And we do that using a program of works. What I'm going to do for you right now is, if I can get my doofer up. Doofer is the universal word, isn't it, for the thing you can't remember the word for. Web window, is that it? It is now. Programs. No, it's not. Give me 1 second. Download, but there it is. This web link will take you to a free download template. It's in the chat, in the Zoom chat, of a program. So you can use that to plot your next project. And on that plotter, you can plot out all your tasks. And people often say to me, fucking hell, Paul, I got so much overwhelm when I'm dealing with this program. Now, overwhelm is only ever a feeling that we generate within ourselves because we're not taking action on the things that we have in here. Imagine trying to do a jigsaw puzzle in your head. You can't do it until the pieces are on the table, right? So that's exactly what you're trying to do there. So let's get all of the words that are in here that we know we need to program and plot and get them on a piece of paper. This is what programmer work does, brings order to our world and order to our project. So we're going to be writing things down. Get a scrap bit of paper first and just fire down the words. Plastering, electrics, plumbing, roofing, scaffold, garden, whatever all those words are, all those job tasks, lists. And this is going to give us a starting point. Get rid of that overwhelming feeling that's inside you that's stopping you from doing this and stopping the action that you know you need to do and take to plan this program out. We're then going to get this program that works. All them words we've just fired down now becomes the jigsaw. Let's put the jigsaw together in order. What do we do with a jigsaw? Edge pieces first, unless you're my daughter and does it backwards just to piss me off. And then that's my OCD. I have to do the edges first. And then we're going to put them words down in order down the left-hand side in the task box. This will make sense once you've got the download. I appreciate you can't see it. And then we're going to give each elemental piece of work that we've listed period. So it might say demo stroke rip out. For a two up, two down, that period remains the same. For a three bed, you might get a little bit longer. For a larger house, you might get a little bit longer. But the process, the sequence is the same, no matter what size of the project is. People get their heads in a knot about this. I was going to say knickers then. Fuck it, it's knickers. Get your knickers in a knot. That's the same, and that's it. The process, the sequence, the system, it remains the same, no matter what you do. We're going to go rip out, first fix, and then and so forth and so on, all the way through the project, no matter what size it is. Doesn't matter. The only thing that changes is duration of each elemental piece of work. And then we're going to plot that down the program. Then once we've done that, we need to get buy-in from our supply chain. Excuse me a sec. We've put our plan on paper. We're now to get buy-in from the supply chain and start plotting in deliveries, cash flow forecast. When's my lending landing? When can I refinance? When can I go again? When can I buy the next project? All this stuff's all going to help you by having it on a program. That's why we need it. You can have a high-level program for the business owner that's going to show you the plot for the year across the top. And we can go for project-specific program that's going to show you the next 90 days maybe. Then the next 30 days. Then the week and then the day. So all a program is a real detailed plan of how you're going to do it, how you're going to do the project. People that don't use a program, I always challenge them with this. Why don't you want to know when that project starts? Why don't you want to know when the project ends? Why don't you want to know when you're required on site to do your milestone check-ins? Why don't you want to know when your finances are going to land? Why don't you want to know what the payment schedule is or the payment plan is? Why don't you want to know your cash flow forecast? Why don't you want to align your borrowing with that? Why don't you want to know when you can exit that property? Well, I do want that information. Write a program then. And it's all at your fingertips. It's all there in front of you. But people are averse to doing the work with this thing. Either a lack of knowledge, lack of confidence, or just can't be asked. Massively important to have a program that works on your project. Next is your specification. Absolutely critical document. Without a spec, your quote is not a quote. Your quote is a guess without a spec. What do I mean by a spec? So a spec is the things that you're putting in. Just to pull it a bit away from refurb, well, I'll explain what a spec is for those that don't know. When you go for coffee at Starbucks or you go to get your gym membership, you really sort of detail what it is that you want. When's the last time you went to Starbucks and said, can I have a hot drink? You don't do that, do you? You specify what type of hot drink that you want. Now, me as the builder, when someone says to me, can you do me a refurb? That's exactly what you're doing to me. You're walking into my coffee shop and asking for a hot drink. I'm then going to go, do you want tea or coffee? Do you want milk or not? What type of milk do you want? Do you want oat milk? Do you want normal milk? Cow's milk? Soy milk? That all that vegan shit? What do they call that one? Tofu milk or whatever it's fucking called. Do you want sugar or do you want sweetener? Do you want one sugar or two sugars? Do you want black or do you want them syrups? Do you want hazelnut? You get the gist. I can't think of anything else that they offer you. You get what I'm saying. Same when you go to the gym. Can I have a gym membership? What you've just said when you go into a gym and say, can I have a gym membership? You're coming to the builder and saying, can I have a refurb? What's the first thing the gym membership's going to ask you? What time are you coming? Do you want peak or off peak? Do you want nutrition plan or not? Do you want PT sessions or not? Do you want spin? Do you want swimming? Do you want one-to-ones? Do you want log into the app? All these other things, these are all form part of your specification. Now, I get that if you don't know, you don't know. And you may well be picking up the phone to builders and saying, look, I don't know what's involved. I want you to refurb this property. Can you come with me to start defining what works we need to do? I understand that. Now, if you're in that space, I do get it. I get that that's where you are and that's the level of education that you have. Now, imagine how this would change your world in your refurbishment projects if you could ring up that builder and give him the job list. This is not for the builder's benefit. This is for your benefit to be able to ring up and say, I've got this refurb project. I'll send you over the specification. And then within that document, you start listing out the works that you want and to what standard and what products you want in there as a result of that service. You immediately position yourself as a professional for a start. You know what it is that your price is going to be based upon, and you can base the products, you can base the finish on your exit strategy. We're not just asking builders to guess when they turn up and, oh, does he want this plastering or Well, you want that doing? Or this might look better, so I'm going to price for that. Well, you want new doors and new liners? Or, you know, because that's what happens when we go in as builders. And then when you're being loose with your inquiry, the quote that you get back will A, be loose, and B, non-comparable, because each builder that goes round doing the three quote thing, they're not basing their quote on anything tangible, just what they believe needs to be done. They don't know what you're doing with the property. They don't understand property strategy. They don't understand what the exit strategy thing means. There's so many things to this thing than just give me a ballpark or give me a price or what's how much is a refurb or whatever that is. I've got no idea how long I've been talking for now. Half hour, something like that. Anyway. So your spec, it's important that your spec is aligned with your exit. It is also the ultimate accountability document in the event of dispute or argument or question even. You know, tiling the kitchen splashback is usually my favorite example of this. When you might see on a builder's quote, kitchen fit, including tiling. What do we mean by tiling? Are we talking three rows above the worktop or are we talking all four walls, floor to ceiling? The difference in price in those two things, if you don't understand what you're reading, can be literally thousands of pounds. Like literally. Take that in a bathroom as well. Bathroom, including tiling, $3,000. You might see that on a quote, but your expectation is that all four walls will be tiled, floor to ceiling, windowsills, and reveals. Builder's expectation, three rows of tiles around the bath space, that's it. That's your lot. See the difference if we're not descriptive and specific enough? So not only is it that accountability document, the more descriptive that we are, the more accurate the quote is, and we've got something to base our numbers on, and we've got an immediate point of reference. It's going to establish professionalism. It's repeatable. It's systemizable. Every project that we do, we should be keeping the same spec. If we delivered a profitable, efficient, compliant project once, why would we change it? We're just going to repeat that process. Repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. It also gives your builders something to actually price up, other than this loose shit language like, can you just give me a price for a refurb, or can I have a ballpark to tarp this place up? Landlord spec, that's one of my favorites. Or standard, can you do me a standard flip? What the fuck does that even mean? It gives you something to manage and something to deliver to. You've got a point of reference, a standard where you can go, this is what I said I wanted, and that's what I want in there. They're the things that we should be pricing up. If you don't have that and you're getting three quotes, those three quotes aren't comparable. I'll give you an example of that. Roof needs replaced. So we're going to send out an inquiry to three roofers and we say, new roof, please. And that's as accurate as we are. One roofer comes back with a price, but he's included labor, materials, scaffold, waste, rubble chute, licenses, insulation, soffits, fascias, gutters, downpipes on the new downpipes and clips. He's included all that, and his price has come back at $4,000. The other end of the spectrum, the guy's just priced for the labor for the tiles, and that's it. And he's come back at £900. You're all property investors. I know where all your eyes are. You're on the £900. And we think we're going to make that work. But the prices aren't comparable because they've priced up different things because your inquiry was too loose. Got to be really clear on what it is that we're asking to be priced and make sure that the prices that are coming back are based on the same thing. It's a bit like asking for three gym memberships, one at David Lloyd and one at your local Spit and Sawdust. The two levels of service are so far apart they can't be compared. Outside of quality, that is. We're talking about the actual products, the parts of that membership that you are looking for. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to go any further. I'm going to take some Q&A because I feel like I've rattled on for hours there. Let's stop me. Stop me there.
Stop me right there.
I've just seen your message, Tom, as well.
Well, that's all spot on, all good stuff. Good timing as well. So take this opportunity to say, if anyone's got any questions from that Interesting talk from Paul. Lob them in the chat and I'll ask a few questions and then we'll get on to any you've got. So that's good. Quote I wrote down from your talk there was, the only way to price up a refurb is to price up a refurb. That seems like a good headline memo for people to take away. I mean, genuinely, it sounds like I'm being sarcastic, but I mean it seriously.
Yeah, that's the book I've just wrote. That takes up one full page, that quote. It fell out. It fell out when I was being interviewed on the radio, that did. And I thought, oh, that was good, that.
Yeah, I'll use that.
Yeah.
Very sensible, very good. When people are going around, let's imagine we have investors in here from all types, from just starting out to lots and lots of properties, big and small. But a typical one might be someone might be just starting out or got a few and they're going around. One problem I think people have is you go into a house and it's in some state of knackered. It's either a bit knackered or very knackered. And they go, well, and I think there's a temptation to let's imagine as well, I know people who go out and do, you know, 5 viewings in a day, 10 viewings in a day. Maybe they've got a day job and they have to stack it all into a Thursday and that's what they're doing. It's doing 10 viewings in a day. And yeah, by the time they've finished, they can't bloody remember the first one. If I do 3, I've probably forgotten what the first one looked like. Yeah. So, but they, of course, need to come up with some sort of rough figure when they then go home come up with those numbers. They need to decide whether each of the houses, you know, individually was going to cost $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, or whatever it might be to do up. And if I'm honest, in the past, I'm less so now, but I used to just kind of, especially when you've got a bit of experience, you're kind of like, well, I've done 5 of these, so I know roughly this will cost me $5,000, $10,000, or whatever it might be. Or this one, you know, the boiler's knackered on this, that's going to be 2, whatever the numbers are. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of works. I guess your point is, yeah, but is, you know, does it work well enough? You gave the example, didn't you, of the $15,000 refurb that became the $27,000 refurb, and I had one that was $25,000 that became $44,000. And clearly that hurts, doesn't it? And yeah, we're better if it was systematized. Is the trade off? I guess this is a long quiz. My question to these things, your bloody talk here, but is the trade off that at least to start with, setting up your process or any similar type of process, procedure, takes time and effort. Is that the rub?
Yes. You know, there is no shortcut. There is no cheat sheet. There is no formulaic approach. There's no fucking formula that you can put into Excel that's going to give you a build cost. The only way you can price up refurb work is to price up refurb work. As I said, you've got to go on that viewing. You can't do 10 viewings in a day if you are looking to price up 10 jobs in a day. It's impossible. You know, you can't, I can't do it. And I've been doing this game 15 years. So if I can't do it as a builder, there's no way that someone that's been done a 1 day property training can go do it. Absolutely no chance. And this is the thing for me. People go onto property viewings without knowing the purpose of them being there. That's critical. When I do a viewing, and even now, I don't even try and price up refurb work on the viewing. I just capture data. So if I'm on a viewing, I've got to know and understand first and foremost why I'm there. If it's a building rapport exercise, that's all I focus on. If I'm capturing data, that's all I focus on. If I'm there to build relationships with estate agents, that's all I focus on. And I think the mistake that people make is they book a 15-minute property viewing and they try and achieve all that in 15 minutes. They try and build rapport with vendors, build relationship with estate agents, price up work and capture data and start measuring up. They try and do all that in 15 minutes. It is not happening. So I get that the market's moving fast right now. But if the market's moving too fast right now, let it speed away is what I would say. That would be my advice. Let it run away and then you can pick up the pieces later on. Because that will happen. People are buying deals at the minute that are not deals. Now, if you're on that property view, when I go and do a property view, and if it's my first viewing, the purpose of being there is to capture data. I have a systemized systemized procedural approach to that viewing, and I'll go in with the floor plan. I have my route even planned in mind from the floor plan before I even go there. I know where I'm going. And just to touch on what you said about we can't remember which property we've been in or what note refers to what, we have a systemized approach to how that's done, how that data is captured in the phone and on forms and what have you. Now it takes, we're going to go into the property and we're going to capture data. Every room's got 4 walls, a floor, a ceiling, a door and a window. That's the only thing I need to describe. And that's the only information I need to leave the property with. I'm going to describe the walls, not start designing. I'm going to start describing what I see. I'll come on to in a sec why we're not designing yet. So that first visit is just to capture data. So I might walk into a living room and write wood chip wallpaper, Artex ceiling, no carpet on the floor, window on one wall, and the door. I see a door. And then I'm going to take photos of each of those things. Now, when just to chunk into that one room, when I do my design later, my design is going to be relative to my exit strategy. So let's say my exit for this particular project is going to be a rental. If it's a rental, I might not start stripping wallpaper and plastering ceilings because it might be okay. I might just paint it. I might just paint the ceiling and paint the walls if it's a rental. So I've got to align what I'm going to do in there with my exit strategy. Now, if I'm flipping it, I'm going to have to take that wallpaper off and I'm going to have to overskin the ceiling. So the prices just for that one room are already hundreds of pounds apart relative to what I'm going to do with the property, relative to the exit strategy. And this is what people don't do. And they want to come up with this multiple exit thing that if you focus on one exit and get your design right and you buy it in the right place, you don't need multiple exits because we've done the work. We've done it properly. We've had a systemized approach and a procedural approach to the project. If that answered your question. I know that was a bit of a long answer.
It's good. I think it did. When projects get bigger, we looked at one recently that would, you know, the purchase price was going to be, in the end, I should point out we didn't buy it, but purchase price was bound to $750,000 and GDV was going to be 2.2, so thereabouts. A lot of work going on. What we decided was, and I welcome your thoughts on this, again, help other people, was, this is kind of, you sort of said this yourself, you know, sometimes you just go, well, this is beyond us. You know, we know a little bit about what we're doing, but we don't know this. You know, these are bigger, more zeros than we used to. There was no one specific thing where you go, well, we can work out what the Kingspan is going to cost, or we can work out, you know, what the plastic is going to be. But just you add it all together and just goes, just too much. And so we then faced the decision of essentially to pay someone, which is what we did. I think I always get the words mixed up. Is it a quantity surveyor? We decided to pay them a couple of days' work, what, 1,500 quid, something like that, to go out and do a rough and tough of what it would cost, just to give us a finger in the air. And that was useful, but because we didn't buy it, we ended up 1,500 quid down. I suppose the thing to say maybe is that perhaps, well, first of all, to welcome your thoughts on doing that on a larger project, but also on smaller projects, is you don't need to do that. If you pointed out, there's tools out there, there's things you can do yourself where you don't need to pay a quantity surveyor to do it. And you can end up with a figure that's, if not 100% accurate, because it's never going to be 100% accurate, at least usable and useful. Would that be right?
Yeah, so what you're getting off a quantity surveyor there is you're getting what's known as a budget figure. And then we're going to work the project into the budget. And that's a perfectly acceptable approach. Any project, hand on heart, honestly, any project I believe is going to cost me in excess of 100K, I outsource the budget figure. Not because I can't do it, but because it's more cost effective for me to do it. Like you just said, it took a couple of days. I am not taking a couple of days out of my business to price up one job that I might not buy. That's nuts. That's not smart business. So I outsource that and I use a company called ProQuant. Where's this community based? Are you in Manchester?
Manchester, yeah.
Yeah, so they're over your way, ProQuant. I forget, the guy's name's Alex that works there. Let's see if I've got one on my table about often. I forget. ProQuant, I think they are, if they're not Manchester, they're certainly Liverpool. They're around that way, Cheshire way, somewhere around there. So you can approach them. They'll price up for you off drawings, which is really handy. They're not 1,500 quid, they're 240 plus that per project. So they're really, really handy. I mean, if I can't earn 240 quid doing other business activity in 2 days, I'm in the wrong job. So that's the way that I look at it. You said about the extra notes on a larger project. That is all it is. It is exactly what you just said. It is just extra notes. The process is the same. There's just more of it. Yeah, so as long as you can secure the lending, the process remains the same. Mm. You know, this is a whole mindset thing now of being able and having the confidence to go ahead with the project with more numbers, because that's all it is. It's just more numbers, bigger numbers, but the process is exactly the same no matter what you're building. Doesn't matter what you're building or converting or renovating or refurbishing. We're still going to go through the 10-step process that our coaching takes you through. First being the survey. So we go and do the survey, capture the data in a systemized, standardized manner. Then we're going to understand the duration, the build process, what in the sequence that it needs to go in. That's the same every time. Then we're going to look at cash flow forecasting. Then we're going to look at subcontractors. Then we're going to work out what the build cost is. Then we're going to write a specification. Then we're going to find and engage with builders. Then we're going to deliver the project. And then we're going to go through all of the legal compliance surrounding all of that. And then we're going to look at defects, warranties, and payments. And that process remains the same, no matter what size of project or what type of project, it's the same.
You spoke about cars and CD players. I'm trying to think. It does make sense, doesn't it? I doubt Tesla's come with CD players, but maybe we're a similar generation where, for me, that's still pretty much cutting edge. But specifications, contracts is the wrong word. When it comes to a refurb, that's a good word. How do I know whether I'm getting a CD player or not? I guess that comes down to the fact that I will have written the spec in this case, or I'll have written I want a CD player or not. So they'll be telling me.
You've asked for it, right? So, and this is the thing. This is exactly the thing. Now, so many people just ask for the car and then they moan when the CD player's missing. Well, where's my CD player? Well, your expectations have not been met. You never asked me for a CD player, mate. You just asked me for a car. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. You know, we're doing a refurb project. Well, why haven't you done the damp course? You didn't ask for a damp course to be done. So the expectation is being misaligned if we're not specific when we make that inquiry. A lazy inquiry gets you a lazy quote. And a lazy quote just ends up in a disaster of a project. Because there's no point in reference.
Speaking of which, you said one of your sort of catchy lines, and that sounds patronizing as well, doesn't it? I thought it was a great line, which is you ask people sort of, why aren't you interested in X? Why aren't you interested in when your project's going to complete, or when the work's going to start, or what specification of things you're going to get on your kitchen or whatever it might be? And you touched briefly on what people say in response to that when they clearly haven't done the kind of process that you recommend. But what do you think's underlying it? Is it, I'm not being unkind to people, is it just laziness or maybe a lack of knowledge as well, or a bit of both?
Probably a lack of knowledge, if I'm honest, because once people are aware of it, I see people try and do it, and which is awesome. And I love that. I love that people's levels of awareness are being raised to such a degree that they go, actually, that's going to be really helpful. That document that I've put in the chat there, that's been downloaded from my website over 10,000 times. So that tells me something, that people are looking to improve that piece of their business, that element of their business. And it's the one thing that drives everything. If you don't deliver to a program, you can't deliver a project to a program. You're just winging it through all the way through. What I see people do, this is a typical newbie property investor. This is the journey. They buy a house and they get the keys. They get their mates and their mum and dad to go help them do the rip out. They get skip on the drive and then they put the greedy boards in the side of the skip with the doors and they fill it full of shit. And the skip's still there on the end of the project. And once they finish the rip out, they then ring round electricians and say, can you come and give me a price for the wiring? Sparky comes round. Yeah, I can start in a month. Already, I would have finished that job. By the time that Sparky starts, I would have finished it from start to finish if it had got me in on day one. And that's the difference because of the approach that people do. I know guys that, like I said, 14 months for a HMO refurb on that chat. I know blokes that live in the same street as me that have taken over a year to do a two-down refurb, not knowing and understanding what that's actually cost them, the true numbers. And then the same guy puts his old thumbnail on Instagram saying his refurb cost him $6,000 because he did all the work himself. What a bellend. It hasn't, mate. It's cost you tens of thousands of pounds and you don't even know it, which is the thing. It's costing more than that in council tax.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not just the cost of the works. It's the opportunity cost of what he's not done with his time, as you were talking about with the...
Opportunity cost and the cost of the liability as well. That's huge.
Yeah.
And massively underestimated.
Yeah, I had a contact who, similar sort of thing, did the same thing, but halfway through the build, because it got known in the local areas, but rough area that it was basically an empty property, he got squatters. It took him 2 years to get him out. Good luck. Good luck with that. And then he had to do the work again.
Again, so, that's the impact of time, right?
Yeah. We've got a question from Yoga, which we'll come to in a second in the chat. But before I get into that, you seem like the kind of guy, I'm going to make a guess here, that you have dairy milk in your coffee with that.
No, I don't have it black, mate.
Black? Oh, he's got even more. He's got even more hardcore. He's out-hardcored me. Well done.
No sugar. And I have at least 10 coffees a day. Three of them will be espressos, and I have about four of these a day as well.
Wow.
The caffeine, I'm ex-alcoholic, so, and when I quit that, alcohol was replaced with caffeine.
Right. Much lesser of two evils, I would imagine.
Yeah. But I'm okay with caffeine. I'm all right with that.
Well, that's good. Yeah, my dad drinks a lot of coffee, and he's still here at 70 odd. So it's, you know, it absolutely could be a lot worse. Well, Yogesh, there's been some questions from the chat here. Yogesh asks, any tip for finding the best builder? I think your entire talk's probably a tip for finding the best builder, but any specific ones?
I'd be looking for accredited builders. And I know that builders don't have to have qualifications, but builders that value their service tend to get some sort of affiliation with an accredited body. Great places to look are the FMB, the Federation of Master Builders. They're the only place that your local authority will recommend you get a builder from. We got Trustmark. They're another great body. The Guild of Master Craftsmen. They're another great body. But also, what I will say is this. What do you mean? Who asked that? Sorry.
Yogesh.
Yogesh.
Yeah.
I even pronounced that right.
You did.
What do I mean? I mean, one that's going to stick to time, stick to budget, give you quality work that doesn't need repairing, and one's going to come back if there's a problem later. That's what I mean.
A great point then. No, so what's critical when people use the word best, I hear it a lot, is that they know what that means. So when we say best, do we truly mean cheapest, or do we truly mean highest quality, or do we truly mean someone that's going to do what they said they would do? Do we truly mean someone that's going to turn up every day, and do they need to turn up every day? So we've got to know what best means in the first place. So the things that you just described is a unicorn. You have to look at the project management triangle. You can only ever have two of them. You cannot have someone that is going to be quick, cheap, and high quality. You can only ever have two of those things, only ever. I know you didn't say that. You said stick to program. Now, that is in an ideal world. We're looking for someone that sticks to program. We're looking for someone that's going to deliver to a standard, not to a high standard, to a standard. We must define what that standard is, because your high standard will be different to mine. And what was the other thing?
Come back when you need stuff rectified.
Respondent to defects, et cetera, et cetera. So now we're going to talk about looking for builders that are open to that, holding a retention. Some builders will say, you're not keeping any retention on me. I want all my money. Some builders will say, yeah, leave 5% on the job for 6 months or 3 months or whatever that is, and pay me when you're happy. This is the whole thing about best builder. I don't think that exists, the best builder. It's got to be someone that suits your needs. I hear this a lot when people say reliable. I'm looking for a reliable builder. What do we mean by reliable? Do you want someone that turns up at 8 and stays till 5? Do you want someone that comes every day? Do you want someone to come when they need to come? Do you want someone to start on day one and not move until they're finished? Do you want someone to sleep there? What do you mean by reliable? You know, you've got to really get a grip of what it is that we're actually looking for. This loose language of best, reliable. We've got to know what that is. I hear it a lot when people say, who's the best supplier for kitchens? It's another great question I get asked a lot. Well, what do you mean by best? Are we talking about high standard, high quality? Are we talking about someone that I use Howdens, and I do that not because they're the best and highest quality. I use Howdens because I know that their customer service is fucking flawless. It is second to none. If I ever have an issue with any Howdens kitchen that I've ever installed, I know I can always go back to the branch and they'll have the bits for me that I need to go put that right. That's the reason that I use them. So for me, they are the best, but that's for me because they're my needs. For somebody else, they might want a 20 grand kitchen or a 30 grand kitchen. Howden's probably not the best for you because you're looking for something German, something solid, something maybe granite worktops. Yes, Howden's provide that, but they wouldn't be my first choice of kitchen supplier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yogesh. We'll jump on one more because I'm keen to get at least two questions from the floor, and then we'll wrap it up. Question from Chris, who says, once you have written your scope of works from the viewing, do you then just have a generic list price for the different work that you can then pull from?
It depends on what shoes I'm in, Chris. So if I'm the builder operating for an investor, then no, because the scope becomes the responsibility of the client. But if it's my own project, Once you've written your scope of work from the viewing, do you then have a generic price list from the... Yes. In short, yes. Yeah. That's the quickest answer I've given all day.
Follow-up. Can I ask a follow-up question, Tom?
Well, it's a bit, I'm going to sound like a knob if I say no now. So
I'm going to...
I love it.
For if someone was starting out, but how do you build that list, or what's the best way to get the different list prices for the different elements of work?
Yeah, I've got three words for you. Do the work. That's it. You've got to do the work. There's no two ways about it. You've got to find out what each elemental piece of work is going to cost for your area using the supply chain that you have in place and price that up. There is no shortcut here. Yeah.
I was hoping you're going to give me a shortcut.
There's no shortcut. There's no cheat sheet. Don't even try. Don't get it off your mate. Let me tell you a story. Now the answer's going to be longer now. Fuck's sake. I'll tell you a story about why I don't provide this on any of my courses at all. I had a guy that did a course with me when I first set up a couple of years ago, and he asked me for an example specification that I had. So I gave it him. Biggest mistake I've ever made. Because what did he do? He used that spec in his project, thinking that because I gave it him, it was the right thing to do. So this must be right. In that spec that I gave him, as an example, it had windows that had been measured and written. And he attached that spec to a set of drawings where there was no window measures on it.
Wow.
Sent this spec over to his window supplier that sent him a load of windows that were no good for his project. And he blamed me. You said that this spec was the dog's bollocks. Well, it is for my project, not for yours. And that's a real simple example, simple analogy of why you should never do that.
Did you offer him a knockdown price for the windows? Because presumably you could have used them as spares, could you? Maybe he was a bit cross with you. Maybe that was not the right time. Maybe go back 6 months after.
He did the old call me out on social media thing. And I was like, mate, it's your mistake, not mine.
Yeah. No, it's brutal. A good reason not to use a T-shirt. It's weird, isn't it? Like, funny enough, you know, of course, we all turn up on a Saturday morning to get shortcuts. And I think there are certain things you can shortcut. And of course, certain things you can learn. And there's certain things where you learn, oh, no, you can't shortcut that. You just got to do it. And that's one of them by the sounds of it. So
it's a bit like joining a gym and expecting a six pack on Monday. Exactly the same thing. You've got to do the work. There's no machine that you can strap to your stomach and get vibrating things that are going to give you a six pack. It does not exist. Yet marketing and stuff and all these videos and the greatest market in the world will lead you to believe that that's a thing. Will lead you to believe that that's possible, but it isn't. There is no shortcut. You have to just do the work. And so many people don't want to do the work. I'm not saying that's you, Chris, but so many people want this shortcut, this cheat sheet, this fucking deal analyzer, this Microsoft Excel thing that they can pump numbers in and it gives them a result. Doesn't work. You have to do the effort. You have to put in the effort to get the result.
There you go. That seems like a sort of exciting and good way to finish today's meeting and the podcast. So, but before I forget, we'll post the link which Paul's kindly shared with us. I'll post that with the podcast for anyone listening, so you can get access to that as well. And of course, Paul's contact details will be with that also. Thank you all very much for attending today. And of course, all of you listening to the podcast, a special thank you to Paul Tinker, our speaker today, who's been excellent. Tune in next week when I'd like to tell you who we've got, but if I'm honest, I've forgotten. Let's see if I can pull it up quickly. I usually have this prepared. Here's one I prepared. Did I prepare this earlier? I sort of did. What have we got? It's the 24th next week. So next week we have Jay Puddy. Very interesting guy who sold his tech company as a young man and has gone on to do all kinds of exciting things in property. Not that well known, but really exciting guy. So I hope to see you all then. And thanks very much again for listening today.